Hey everybody, Mark Ashton, lead pastor of Christ Community Church on this end of the camera, coming to you with Proyecto 4-4. Thought I'd do it in Spanish this week. We read from Nehemiah chapter 8 through 10, and the date is October 11th, and we see some cool things happening here. After the dedication of the wall, or actually after the completion of the wall, before its dedication, Ezra is called upon to read the book of the law of Moses to the people. All morning long. Can you imagine sitting in that church service where Nehemiah is just reading straight up from the book of the law? Well, interestingly, this had two opposite effects on people, and neither of them was putting people asleep. The first effect it had is it filled them with joy and excitement because for the first time, many of them actually understood the law. Here's our heritage. Here's what we're supposed to do. Now, guys, we can go and act on it. There's a lot of excitement that happened. But at the same time, another emotion came as well. It's the emotion of rats, remorse, and shame coming over the people because they knew just how far they were from accomplishing the law. They knew just how guilty they were, and so they began to weep aloud. And finally, they were quieted by the Levites who told them, guys, we're right smack in the middle of a holiday. If you read the law today like we just did, you'll find out that, well, today's the Feast of Tabernacles. And this feast that was celebrated was a feast of joy, so the people had to stop crying so that they could have their feast of joy on the day that the law was read. This feast that was celebrated for 7 days was one of the three great feasts, along with Passover and Pentecost, during which all Jewish men were to assemble in Jerusalem. It was this joyous agricultural festival, a rockin' all-out party that was celebrated at the completion of the harvest. It was like Thanksgiving on steroids. But the rabbis said, the rabbis used to say this, he who has not seen Jerusalem during the Feast of Tabernacles does not know what rejoicing means. That's how good this party was. It must have been a memorable feast, for Nehemiah tells us that there has not been one like it since the days of Joshua. So they rocked it hard when Nehemiah was there. And so the leaders said, hey, stop that crying. It's a feast day. And the people did. Well, the main content of these two chapters is not that episode. It's actually the specific pledges that Nehemiah and his compatriots made in the covenant which they concluded with God after Ezra's reading of the law and the celebration of the Feast of Tabernacles or the Feast of Booths. So moved were they by the law and the remarkable prayer of repentance that they not only made some promises to God, but they put them in writing and put their names to them. They made a binding agreement, a covenant with God. Well, the first commitment the inhabitants of Jerusalem made to the Lord won't surprise you after having read the book of Ezra. We will not give our daughters in marriage to the foreign population or take their daughters for our sons. Now remember, the issue here is not one of racial hatred or ethnic cleansing. The issue was purity of worship and the survival of their faith. The very fact that this is the first commitment that they made by the signers of the Solemn Covenant, it makes it abundantly clear that no other issue was more important in terms of the survival of the people. Nothing could be more important than making sure there would not be another lapse into idolatry and that generation after generation would worship God. Well, the second commitment was to preserve the sanctity of the Sabbath day by refusing to buy goods on the Sabbath day. In a society built around the law of God, the keeping of the Sabbath was incredibly important. How we in our day keep the Lord's day is an issue to which most of us have given far too little attention. I mean, imagine if we made a covenant not to buy any goods on the Sabbath day. Have you ever thought that every time that you buy something on the Sabbath day, that means that somebody else has to work, and if nobody bought stuff on the Sabbath day, then a lot less people would be required to work on that day because it wouldn't be economically feasible. You know, once we've left the building where we meet on Sunday morning for our worship service, most of us feel released from any further spiritual obligation. We've done our sacred duty, and the rest of the day is ours to, quote, spend in any way that we wish. You know, years ago, lots of communities used to have what they called blue laws. All commercial establishments in blue law communities were closed on Sunday. No business was transacted. It was like Hobby Lobby and Chick-fil-A all over the place. These laws were a carryover from an earlier time when the biblical foundation of our society was so strong that it actually influenced the local ordinances about when a store could and couldn't be open for business. In our current greedy society, I doubt that we'll ever see blue laws again, but we Christians should consider the possibility of voluntarily refraining from indulging in our commercialistic addictions on the Lord's Day. Remember the Sabbath day and keep it holy, not only for yourself, but also for others. The third commitment was also a Sabbath-related one. So you've got don't give your daughters and sons to marry anybody but our own daughters and sons. And then the next commitment is the Sabbath day. The third one is about the Sabbath rest for the land. Every 7 years in Israel, they were to grow no crops because they were giving a Sabbath rest to the land. During this sabbatical year, no debts were to be collected. I know that the Israelites honored this pledge and began to keep the sabbatical year because when the Romans came on the scene a few centuries later, they're still doing this, they misunderstood the origin and nature of this practice. Tacitus, the Roman historian, says of the Israelites, quote, they were led by the charms of indulgence to give over the seventh year as well to inactivity. Well, that was the third commitment. The fourth commitment was to bring annual offerings in support of the ministry of the temple. In addition to the one-third shekel, the Israelites also pledged to bring the first fruits, a tithe or a tenth, of their crops and of everything else, their cattle, their children, and even their time to the temple service for the Lord. 10% of everything they had went to God. This principle is extremely clear. The first and the best of everything you have belongs to God. So bring it to Him. The last thing to point out today is that the Levites and priests were supported in their ministries by the tithes and offerings of God's people. This practice is reinforced by the Apostle Paul in the New Testament when he tells Christians to support their pastors, allowed the priests and Levites to wholly devote themselves to the work of the ministry. And that kind of paradigm continues on today, even in our own church. Thanks for those of you who are very faithful in your giving. Four things in the covenant: purity of those who marry, or who your kids marry, purity of the Sabbath day, purity of the Sabbath year, and purity with your finances. Commit your family to the Lord, commit your time to the Lord, commit your money to the Lord, and God will bring His blessings in your life, just as He did to this generation of the people of Israel.